listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. This episode features a conversation on the national impact and response to the COVID-19 pandemic. NYSAC's Executive Director, Stephen Aquario, is joined by the National Association of Counties Executive Director, Matt Chase. They will discuss the disparate impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, economic and federal stimulus concerns, and an overview of county crisis response.
Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
So what brings you up to upstate New York, Matt, in the dog days of summer here?
Well, for me and my family, it was a good opportunity to escape Washington, D.C. Congress has adjourned, and the White House is taking a couple of days off. They've been fighting over the next COVID relief package. I'm a native of upstate New York, so snuck away for 14 days of quarantine in upstate New York.
Well, you're staying in a beautiful part of our state, Warren and Washington counties around beautiful Lake George, New York. What does Lake George look like in August?
It is absolutely crazy. It record boat rentals. People are out on the lake. It is packed as far as boaters. And the restaurants are a little slower, obviously, but it does look like their economy is doing okay around the lake. But I think once you get off the water, it's a little slow.
Well, that water temperature was unusually warm. I've been hearing some of the reports in the mid to upper 70s in Lake George. That's pretty warm water temperature. You probably remember that as a young boy.
I do. And unfortunately for me, I get the early morning before work and the evening swims, so I really can't tell you what the daytime temperatures are, but I can tell you about the early mornings before 7 a.m. and later 7 p.m.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned a lot of boaters. We have been seeing a lot of activity on the water. Matt, I think that has to do with people feeling a little stir crazy right now. We've been cooped up here in upstate New York, in New York State, not in upstate New York, all across the state for 6 months, coming through a COVID pandemic, which is really why we wanted to talk to you today, to get your expertise, your experience, what your observations were as we went through this pandemic. Of course, New York State, one of the early states to go into the pandemic. It was right after the NACO Legislative Conference where this pandemic really took a stronghold in the state of New York, in the county of Westchester, New Rochelle, within the county of Westchester, had discovered a cluster. And from that cluster, from one individual, which spread to several individuals, which spread around that whole community, then that region, and then, of course, into New York City, out onto Long Island, and then, of course, the rest of the state. And then, for that matter, really the rest of the country started to go through this. What were your observations, Matt, from Washington, D.C., where you oversee, if you will, all the states? You watch all the state associations and the counties around the United States. What was going through your mind in early to mid-March when we first went into this pandemic?
Yeah. Steve, I'm even going to back up a little bit further. And right around Valentine's Day, it was actually February 14th, Valentine's Day, San Diego County declared the nation's first public health emergency related to COVID. That was because the county was dealing with the U.S. military to quarantine and deal with the families and the military personnel who were stationed in China and who were relocating back to the United States. And they were going to Miramar military base there from the Top Gun movies. And the county moved very quickly. In fact, the board chairman, Supervisor Greg Cox, who you know was the immediate past president of NACO, the county had unfortunately learned some hard lessons in recent years with a Hep A outbreak with their homeless population. And the county had done a lot of after-action reports. And they knew with COVID that it would spread like wildfire, and they were not going to be underprepared. They were going to move aggressively to protect their citizens. So that got on NACO's radar around Valentine's Day. And as we moved into our legislative conference, you'll remember we had President Trump, we had the CDC director at our conference. And that was really the buzz of the conference was people were starting to talk about. So I think it's the first time I heard the term social distancing. and people were doing fist bumps rather than handshakes. But to your question, we are seeing this pandemic play out very differently across the country, particularly from an economic standpoint. In New York State, in the metro area, the tri-state metro area, we're devastated, as you well know. And I think what we're seeing, you asked me about upstate New York, we're seeing a lot of downstate New Yorkers flee to these rural communities. And we're seeing it across the country where there's a very uneven economic impact. Those who can work remotely, particularly white collar workers, are fine. They can afford gas for their boat. They can go out and do things. But those that work in the hotels, those that work in the restaurants, they're part of the 32 million Americans who are unemployed or underemployed. And so we are seeing this pandemic just play out very differently based on where you sit on the socioeconomic ladder.
Do you think the COVID-19 pandemic is going to change the way county governments operate or are structured? Or do you think Absolutely. That we're going to weather this? It seems like, building on what you just said, Matt, that there has been a disparate impact economically to individuals. Those who have broadband, whether they're in urban centers or rural centers, they have broadband, they might be able to get the job done. Some folks aren't as sophisticated or used to working remotely like that. Let's talk about that, Matt. You mentioned the disparate impact that COVID-19 yeah. pandemic affected people differently. Some folks had broadband. Our office was able to convert to working remotely almost seamlessly. Right. You did the same thing, where folks from around Washington, D.C. could work from yeah. their houses. That might not be the same case around the United States. Yeah. Do you think this pandemic will shake up how we work in American society?
Yeah, and just like how you and the New York State Association of Counties are really studying county operations, the National Association, we've been looking at this the same way. We've been looking at it particularly through the recorders and the clerk's office, those that are really public-facing, the tax assessors, the clerks, and others. And what we are seeing is that counties have moved fairly seamlessly into a virtual environment. Where we've had a lot of complications are in states where the governors have, in fact, mandated that the county courthouse stay open, even in places where the county public health authorities are saying they should really reduce capacity. So if you put the politics aside, which is tough to do in this world, we are seeing counties be incredibly focused on their residents and how can they continue to deliver services in a fast, efficient way. But as you were talking about, counties tend to serve people on the worst day of their lives. They're dealing with domestic violence, maybe they're dealing with substance abuse, mental health, they're dealing with the criminal justice system, or maybe even our public works department needs to come out and help them with their roads and bridges. And so what we're finding is those that don't have internet access, it's a real problem. And we think both cell service and high-speed internet are the most important things that we can be working on, along with mental health. Those two go hand in hand, because if you don't even have a broadband connection, it's harder. I'm sitting up where I'm staying in New York. My sister actually is a counselor for kids with special needs in the Saratoga School District. And she is doing all of her one-on-one counseling through Zoom. And the kids she's dealing with mostly are suicidal. They come from severe domestic violence. And she's really concerned, you know, what is going to happen to people. And I think that's the nature of county government, right? That we serve people. And so, well, many folks are doing fine. I think our role is to serve those that can't really help themselves and need additional assistance.
You mentioned mental health, Matt. I remember speaking with George Latimer, of course, the Westchester County executive, about the importance of mental health services during the early days of the pandemic. Not uncommon for individuals to be working in those volunteer call centers,
that's right,
15 plus hours a day, listening to the voices of individuals calling in afraid for their lives, afraid for their safety. And to take those complaints to take those concerns. It's not an easy thing to do. One has to process all that, give advice to another individual, hope that they're right, hope that they're helping that individual. Of course, we're dealing with something invisible, and we didn't know how that virus was behaving in the early days. So counties providing that mental health services, very important in the early days and continues to this day, 6 months into this pandemic. Let's talk about the role of the states. In New York, very early on, the counties, every county in New York declared a state of emergency. So all 62 counties declared a state of emergency in March and into April, very early on to address this problem. But the state of New York, shortly thereafter, or in the midst of all these local executive orders, passed a state executive order to really take over the response to this pandemic from a statewide perspective, meaning that the counties could not do things individually. They had to get approval from the state. And this is sort of different, Matt, from a usual state of emergency. When a county does an executive order, it is responding to the needs of its citizens in the best way that they know how to do it, and they use emergency powers to do it. That's what we do with floods, with tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, or other natural disasters, ice storms. This is a natural disaster. Our state chose early on to control it from a statewide level. Other states like California and Florida left it open for counties to do more restrictive regulations. New York could not do that. We had to get the approval of the state if we wanted to do something differently. Do you have any observations how the states acted, how the counties around the United States acted, what worked without naming states or particular counties, but what worked from where the way you saw things, what didn't work? What have we learned going through this pandemic in a coordinated federally supported, state managed, and locally executed state of emergency?
Well, I think what we've learned is this is probably the most politicized disaster in our recent history, and that what is happening is the lack of trust and the lack of collaboration between federal, state, and local officials is playing out in a way that people like us have been screaming about, that we all share the same citizens, the federal, state, and local government, that we all have the same mission, but we each have our strengths. And that when you don't work well together, when you politicize everything, citizens and businesses and our residents pay the consequences. Where we've seen really strong state and local collaboration, things are much better. Maybe they haven't stemmed the virus totally, but their hospitals have better planning. Their school opening has better planning. Citizens are getting a consistent message. Should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? Do kids get sick? Do they not get sick? And going back to the mental health issue that you raised, we're seeing it very different levels. You have some people our age whose parents maybe are in a nursing home or in a hospital, and they're alone. And the guilt that the parents, that the kids face with their parents dying alone is just tremendous. On the flip side, you have people with kids who are trying to decide whether to send them to school or not. And you just have the overall economy. And so mental health is a great example of where federal, state, and local can come together, including with private sector and with nonprofits. And so just like this country has done on 9/11, for example, where we came together, we would love to see federal, state, and local a reset and to say, we're in this for the long haul and how can we reset? But long way of saying, we think locals know the communities better. We tend to be less political, and our residents know where to get us, where to talk to us. And so I think we tend to make more even keel decisions.
Yeah, the execution, of course, of an emergency happening at the local level, the emergency operations centers. I can't thank you enough, Matt, for the guidance, the support, the leadership that you showed right from the beginning, convening the counties around the United States on a daily, regular, daily, weekly, monthly basis for 6 months as we went through the various stages of the pandemic. It may have hit the East Coast first and the West Coast first, and then it's squeezed into the other parts of the country, north, south, west, east, all coming together. And of course, right now, as we sit in August 2020, affecting the whole United States. But I can't thank you enough, Matt, for the leadership that you showed and the executive committee and the board of directors of the National Association of Counties. I was so impressed with the ability of the counties of New York, the executives, the county executives, the chairs, the county administrators, and the leadership capacity that they showed early on. When you join public service, when you run for office, Matt, this is not something one would ever expect to have to confront. When you run for office, to be the on-site incident commander. The work of the elected officials, Matt, as incident commanders was breathtaking to me. The ability to spring into action to confront an invisible virus, whether they were in New York, in California, or Washington State, where this whole thing started, in the nursing homes in Washington State, was just breathtaking to me. What are your observations about how these county officials, in my mind, really led the way through this pandemic?
I'm going to come back to King County in Seattle, but I want to first say thank you to you as well, and to the New York State Association of Counties, to your executive committee, and just individual members. We've been talking daily and participating in some of your state calls, and what motivated us early on, I'll never forget talking to the coroner from Suffolk County, who participated on one of our national media calls, and many of your county executives, including some who've lost their own family members to the pandemic. They've been so inspirational to see how they did use their training from a natural disaster and applied it. But what has struck me is just how personal COVID-19 is to New York State officials, because you were the epicenter. And so everybody knows somebody who has dealt with it, or they've dealt with themselves. But as we were saying earlier, that's in the DNA of counties. When people are at their worst and they're facing these unprecedented pandemics, county officials have stepped up. And I think NYSAC has done that in your leaders. King County, which is where Seattle is, the county executive there, moved very quickly. One of the first things they did was the county bought some hotels to locate their homeless population. And as you well know, we've been dealing with the opioid crisis and other sort of substance abuse issues and mental health for some time. And so our public health officials were used to dealing with hepatitis C and maybe HIV. They weren't used to dealing with something like COVID that spreads literally that quickly. But those counties moved so fast. And what is incredible is they tapped into their reserves. They didn't know that there was going to be any federal support. And they drained their resources up front because they said, that's what our citizens need. And if they are in a moment of need, we're going to use every tool at our disposal. And as you said, I think that's just what counties have been doing across the country.
Matt, in the early days of the pandemic, the Congress was watching what was happening in the states. And what may have started as a New York and California disaster became an American disaster. And the Congress began to respond responsibly, in my view, responsibly, doing a payroll protection plan for small businesses. We went from a 3% unemployment to triple that in the state of New York, where we have unemployment at 11%+, even to this date, 11%+. Unemployment, pandemic unemployment insurance, absolutely essential. The Congress passing an FMAP increase, vital to the state of New York, something the counties of New York have championed for decades to provide that emergency federal assistance in the Medicaid program, unemployment insurance, a payroll protection plan. They acted very responsible in the various phases that they passed as Stimulus 1, Stimulus 2, Stimulus 3, Stimulus 4, as they worked through these various phases, responding to the needs of the American people. One thing that didn't happen along this way was the ability to offset revenues and losses, economic losses, or an economic injury to the state. In our particular state, it's about a $13 billion hit to the state's revenues through personal income taxes, corporate taxes to the city of New York, who claims a $9 billion injury. So $13 billion to the state, $9 billion to the city of New York alone. And then if we spread it around the other 57 counties of New York, it's another $4.5 billion in lost revenues. What was happening was tourism suddenly dropped to next to nothing. So we lost occupancy taxes. We lost sales taxes. We lost other fees that were being collected and used to provide government services. So there was a severe injury. When I look back and think about the 2009 President Obama dealing with the national recession, they did immediately provide that revenue offset that could be used for lost revenues for state and localities. What was the mindset of the Congress here, the President of the United States, that they just didn't want to do this as part of the earlier packages?
Well, one of the things, when you mentioned the unemployment statistics, just to put that into perspective, today we're hovering around 32 million, depending on how you want to count it. In the 2008 to 2010 Great Recession, the word Great Recession, because of how historic it was, we reached 16 million unemployed Americans over a 2 to 3 year period. It took us 2 to 3 years of that recession to hit 16 million unemployed Americans. We hit 32.4 million within 3 or 4 months in the United States. And we're having a hard time understanding if that number is actually higher because of the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, for small businesses, and the CARES Act and the other federal bills have pumped so much money. Why we're at a stalemate now is you have a couple of key players switched in the administration, and we're getting closer and closer to an election. And so I think the mindset is they thought this pandemic was going to last a couple of weeks, if not months, and then we would move on. What we're finding is that this pandemic's going to be around for a while, and it's really uncertain what's going to happen with the economy. But the mindset has been, we'll get through it, we'll adjust, and then we'll get back to work.
I thought that we made the case collectively, the National Association of Counties, the state of New York and its Association of Counties and the other associations of counties around the United States, about why this was an impact to them in different ways. Some states rely more on property taxes, so they may not have felt that economic injury that acutely, like New York, which relies a lot on sales tax, where we were hit more immediate. What was the thinking behind the United States on addressing population thresholds? They did something very important to address populations of 500,000 or more through the U.S. CARES Act, where this provided really a backstop, if you will, for the nation's most populous counties. Yeah. And in New York, about six counties received this aid. Of course, all the states got this U.S. CARES funding. But what was the thinking behind that when a lot of the country has population, or the vast majority of the United States counties, were under that threshold? Why didn't they do it together, or more of a phased approach or a tiered structure to help the urban centers who needed the help immediately, provide more resources for them, but also include the smaller rural counties and counties just under 500,000?
Yeah, well, remember, when they passed the CARES Act, which is the big $2 trillion aid package, that was March. And where was the pandemic? Where was the virus at that point? It was primarily in big urban centers.
Big cities.
at that point in time, it really hadn't gone out to the rural areas. The other thing was they focused on the large urban areas more out of an administrative decision, meaning Treasury is not a grant-making agency. And so 48 hours before that bill passed, local governments weren't getting anything. All the money was going to go to state governments. And actually, Senator Schumer stepped in. He was one of the three or four people negotiating that bill and demanded that local governments be eligible. And because Treasury's not really a grant-making agency, they limited how many direct recipients there would be. And they picked 500,000 and above. Fast forward to today, where the House, Senate, and White House are negotiating, and there's much more support and recognition that all counties, cities, and states should get some aid. Now, they're fighting over the dollar amount, but now that the virus has gone to just every corner of the country, I believe every county in the country now has at least one COVID case. And that just happened a couple of weeks ago. And so now there is more widespread understanding that this is truly a national issue, not a urban versus a rural.
We'll be right back to the discussion after this brief message. Stay up to date in real time by following and engaging with NYSAC on Twitter. We highlight county-related issues, member advocacy, and legislative activities taking place at the state and local levels. Make sure to follow us at NYS Counties for timely and relevant resources for county leadership.
Throughout the pandemic, Matt, you brought in expertise from the president's administration. You brought in the National Institute of Health. You brought in the CDC. You brought in Dr. Birx. You brought in some very important and influential people to help answer questions. The amount of questions that were produced throughout this pandemic was just stunning. And the responses by the federal government, just outstanding in trying to get information out to the states. We had a lot of confusion early on with an inability to secure personal protective equipment. It really seemed to expose the United States on something very basic, that we didn't have. I'm holding up a mask here. It's a mask which should probably cost a few pennies to produce this type of mask. But we were heavily reliant on China. And we were heavily reliant on trying to find personal protective equipment, the innovation of county officials to manufacture using 3D printing technology. Right. County leaders did this.
Right.
We didn't rely on the states. We didn't rely on the federal government. We relied on ourselves to walk over to a community college and produce a face shield using 3D technology. The innovations that were advanced by county leaders, you mentioned Suffolk County, the conversation that you had with the coroner on how they repurposed some county assets to be used as a temporary morgue in that particular situation. This was a very frightening time during America, or the world. But the county leaders and their innovations were just breathtaking. I don't know if you have any observations that you have about other areas around the state, around the United States, where you saw county leaders just going over and above what was expected of them when they came into public office. Things like producing face shields or masks, yeah, or convening with the private sector in ways that they hadn't before. Do you have any observations about how these local governments sort of led the way through the pandemic?
There are countless examples, but let me just step back and, well, we don't think of elected officials being prepared for this global pandemic. Unfortunately, they are. We have been seeing in the last 10 years that counties of 25% of all of America's counties experience a presidential level disaster each year. We've been averaging about 800 out of our 3,000 counties each year having some sort of disaster, some type of disaster that rises to the level of a FEMA presidential disaster declaration. That's hurricane, snowstorm, ice storm, etc. The difference being that they're isolated to maybe a neighborhood within a county, or maybe it's a couple of counties, it's a region. It's certainly not every county in the United States. And so I think people have been used to it. Like out west, we've been dealing with these horrific wildfires, just devastating. Wildfires that move miles in just a couple of minutes. And so I think we learned, and we've been really been teaching this importance of resilience. It's all about the mindset. And that's what this country's been built on since our founding, is being resilient and tough and innovative. But it's still incredible to watch. And as you said, whether it's a coroner building a remote morgue, to folks engaging with the elderly, keeping people ready to go. Childcare is a big one. We're seeing a ton of innovation around childcare. And of course, the PPE, it still remains a big issue.
Do you think that learning what we learned through the pandemic on the inadequate supply of personal protective equipment, that we couldn't get a simple mask to a nursing home, we couldn't get an adequate supply of surgical masks to a surgery center in a hospital, that's unacceptable. It seems that we were totally caught off guard, and that we remain off guard with this, meaning that even today, 6 months later, Matt, it's even harder to find an N95 mask, a KN95 mask. These are terms I never heard of before the pandemic, but certainly the hospitals were using them on a regular basis. I hope that the federal government can work with the states, and the states can work with the counties to figure out a better way to provide personal protective equipment and distribute that fairly and equally around the United States. It seems that we had a real shortcoming with personal protective equipment. The federal government has a role, the states have a role, and the counties have a role in acquisition of this product. I noticed the president did activate the national defense laws or requirements that trigger private industry to manufacture masks during a pandemic. Do you think that we learned something through here, and if we swing into another rebound of this virus, that we'll be better prepared into the fall or winter of 2021?
Well, I think we have a long way to go. And the key is that the supply chains are global, that this pandemic is not limited to the United States, as other nations like India, as you're seeing their cases spike, these companies will sell to the highest bidder, including American companies will sell overseas. That's the free market that we live in. What we are still pushing on is definitely a larger investment up front, that we think there's a little lull here in the summer. We thought that back in the spring. The experts kept saying the summer will be a little bit of a lull. We better prepare for the fall. I think what we're seeing is it's still incredibly uneven, that the hospitals are doing better, but now we have the school issues that we have to deal with. And we're still seeing problems in our jails across the country. We're still seeing problems in the nursing homes across the country. And we can always use more. We can always use more. We would prefer to see it manufactured domestically, but it takes time to ramp up.
I look forward to working with you and the president and the Congress and, of course, our governor here on personal protective equipment. That was a very important missing component in addressing this important pandemic for first responders, for our nursing homes and our hospitals. Matt, in the few minutes that we have remaining, we're sitting here in mid-August. The Congress has not acted. The leadership cannot come together on a next round of stimulus funding. This one very important, of course, to the counties of the United States, the counties of New York, the states of the United States needing this revenue loss offset. We're in mid-August here. The president issuing executive orders to address unemployment, continuation of unemployment benefits, address the payroll protection plan, continuation of these types of programs. We have lots of problems that remain. We have a U.S. CARES Act that's sitting in place right now that needs to be adjustments made for the counties and the states that receive those funding that the Treasury might not have the ability in statute to do, meaning that Congress needs to act. What are your thoughts here as we go through up facing Labor Day? What are the consequences here? We have an election looming out there, a federal election. We have voting. Counties run the voting process here. We need funding for implementing voting in a safe way. Yeah. We have a short window here to get aid to the American governments, the counties and the states. How are they going to get this done?
Well, hopefully they're going to get it done within a couple of days. We hope, at least a couple of weeks. For counties, our forecast is we're looking at a $202 billion impact over the next two fiscal years. That includes $114 billion nationwide of lost revenue from county revenue sources alone. Then you add on state funding cuts. As you mentioned earlier, if New York State is $13 billion in the hole, of course they're going to pass both mandates down to the local level along with fewer dollars. And so nationally, we are pushing with the governors, the state legislators, the cities, that state local governments are a huge stabilizing force. We are reminding them in the Great Recession of 2008 to 2012 that the country would have recovered a lot faster if Congress had even provided more money. That's not our opinion. That's the opinion of the Federal Reserve Bank. That's the opinion of the Congressional Budget Office. All of the outside experts are saying, if we want to, one, make sure that our communities are safe, health, economic security, community security, we need to invest in state and local governments. But from a broader economic standpoint, if the Congress does not provide additional fiscal relief, it will slow the recovery of this nation.
Matt, isn't it somewhat, arguably, largely the role of the federal government to provide a stimulus to the American economy? This is not a South Dakota problem. This is not a Florida problem. This is not a New York problem, a California problem, a Washington State problem, a New Mexico problem, an Arizona problem. This seems to me to be an American problem, meaning the foundation, the economy of the United States of America was shaken to its core. Doesn't the federal government have a responsibility to continue to stimulate this economy? And by stimulating it, it means to stabilize it so that we can get back to where we were, hopefully someday, pre-COVID, stronger, more efficient, more resilient. Why can't they get this done?
Well, first of all, it is a national pandemic. And the evidence is that the President of the United States declared a blanket national presidential
emergency. Has that ever been done before?
Not to my knowledge. Not for this length either. So it truly is a national issue. The federal government is providing a stimulus to the economy. They're giving it to airlines. They're giving it to major industries, all the small businesses. Every American got a check below a certain income level. But there is a feeling that state and locals should raise their own revenue.
But don't the state and local governments contribute to the gross domestic product?
Over 15%.
That's a remarkable contribution to the economy.
And what we are reminding folks in places like New York, 45 states where counties cannot raise their taxes due to property tax caps. And so whether it's, if it's regardless of your revenue source, just about every revenue source is going down. And even property taxes, we expect to go down in the out years. So we are trying to overcome this philosophical opposition to a federal, quote, bailout for poorly managed states. The reality is, since 2008, states have bigger rainy day funds than they've ever had. The problem is this pandemic is bigger than any disaster we've had. And so for a county, you're in a catch-22. If you're a county government and you're sound fiscal management and you save money and you build reserves, your citizens pound you for having extra money in the bank. You're overtaxing. And so we've been in this catch-22 of we raised enough reserves that was appropriate for the time, but we never anticipated a pandemic at this level. So we are calling on Congress and the White House to get together. We are asking for enough money to make sound strategic investments for today, but that will also be smart for tomorrow. Broadband, more PPE, as you mentioned. We need to prepare for the future, not just for today.
Our president has been very receptive to the needs of New York, in my opinion. He has delivered what we have asked of him. I hope that he listens to this podcast, that Secretary Mnuchin, Chief of Staff Meadows, hears your call in the halls of Congress about why this is important. I'll leave the last word to you here, Matt, about what can counties, whether they're county officials in New York State or from county officials around the country, what do they need to be doing over these next few weeks of August? Is there anything further that they need to do? And I know that some counties may not have that need for revenue offset assistance, but they certainly need personal protective equipment. They certainly need the ability to test their population, whether it's diagnostic testing or wastewater treatment surveillance. Another innovation from counties innovating. We led the way on wastewater treatment surveillance, surveilling wastewater for the COVID virus. But my point is, whether they need it for a revenue offset or a different component, right, an unemployment insurance extension, all of the counties of the United States need further assistance. What is your thoughts? What do you want to tell these county officials in New York, where you are today, and around the United States as we get to this final stretch?
The number one thing that we need county officials to do is tell the county story. The members of Congress often know the county officials, they're friends, they're member of the same political party, they know them at a personal level, but they really don't have a great appreciation for the actual day-to-day work of the average county worker. They don't realize that counties in New York State are helping with 0 to 3 early childhood development for those with disabilities, or what happens in the foster care system as these kids age out. If you're a kid who ages out now, where do you go? And the real practical day-to-day issues that New York counties are facing and counties across America, we want you to tell the story. We want you to personalize this, humanize what counties do. That when we talk about counties facing a $202 billion impact nationwide, those numbers translate into services. We're not trying to raise money just to fund county operations. Counties are major funders of our local nonprofits who deal with substance abuse and domestic violence and job retraining skills. We're huge funders in small business loan funds
opioid addiction.
I talked to a New York State executive the other day who said their cocaine is now being laced with fentanyl and that they're seeing 50 to 60-year-olds either overdose and die or overdose and end up in the ER. And so the number of issues are endless. It's almost overwhelming for a member of Congress to comprehend all the issues that county officials are facing day to day. As we tell the members of Congress all the time, counties cover domestic policy A to Z. We cover everything from agriculture to Zika or zebra mussels in New York State. And literally, well, state and federal policymakers deal with the legislation and the policy, the county officials are implementers. And we really don't have that luxury of picking and choosing what we work on. We have to work on the crisis of the day.
Well said, Matt. Again, thank you for taking some time with us today. I hope you have success in Washington, D.C. You've helped the counties of New York tremendously during this pandemic, and we're very grateful.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you to NYSA.
Thanks for listening to this NYSAG podcast. Keep tuning in to hear more insightful conversations on county government throughout New York State, and feel free to reach out to our staff if there is a topic you would like to hear us discuss on the podcast.